Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 250.
This week on the podcast, the GOP's obsession with arming crazy people has reached its natural conclusion. They want to arm themselves.
And the Republicans look to skirt the democratic process with their health care bill by passing it before going home to celebrate said democratic process.
Plus, like corporate America, the Democrats ponder a grand strategy of firing a woman to make up for their massive failures.
And the White House to Obama. Why didn't you stop us from committing treason?
Plus, newly released dashcam video proves that there truly is no justice for Philando Castile.
And Trump's new policy on Cuba? Wasting taxpayer money on unnecessary travel audits in an attempt to win the friendship of Marco Rubio.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Welcome to the Sester Centennial edition of Brain Trust Live.
Like, huh? Oh, the what centennial?
Well,
huh?
Who? I pointed huh? out what? To Brent that the reason we don't know the term Sester Centennial is because America's not even that old.
Yeah.
So we've never celebrated one before.
Yeah, we beat you, America.
Yeah, we're finally older than America. Right before July 4th, we finally slipped in there.
That's right.
But in any case, we know we brought you a kind of bizarre late mini podcast last week,
yeah.
even though we managed to make it 52 minutes long or so.
Yeah. Well,
but
you know
us.
What?
That's life.
When you leave us with the task of talking about like one or two subjects, and
we can still do it for an hour.
You and I were just like, well, we have to talk about John Ossoff, and
right.
we have to talk about healthcare. And
those
let's
are
just, we'll
the
just,
two bread and butter
we'll
issues
just,
of our lives,
we'll
by
just
the way.
Rail on those two things, and it'll be a short podcast this week.
It wasn't. No, of course it wasn't going to be.
No.
That was, like, those are the two things that we can't shut up about.
Right, like,
if
in,
you had,
insane
if
electoral
Bernie Sanders
politics.
Had done something that week, we would have been there for hours.
I know.
I mean, thank God he stayed pretty quiet.
I know.
That was intentionally.
Yeah.
It was a short podcast for a reason.
So
we
many
were tired.
So many people on Wednesday morning were like, oh man, what does this whole John Ossoff thing mean? And I was like, I can't talk about it any longer.
Right.
I'm going to refer you to www.braintrustlive.com.
Where you can
a
feel
good
free.
30 minutes of my thoughts on it.
So true.
And I just can't do it any longer.
Yeah.
But one of the stories that we did not bring to you was...
This congressional
this
shooting.
Congressional shooting, yeah.
Steve Scalise,
which
by
is the
way,
big news of last week. So,
on I think it was on Friday, he was moved out of intensive care.
Yes,
he was undergoing surgery. He had a pretty bad. He got shot in the hip and had like some pretty bad damage.
Yeah, he was,
from it.
Yeah.
So and a few thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
Now that we've got we're over a week out of it, so
yeah,
we've all
stay
heard
here
the
for long.
Like analysis.
We're just
of it.
Catching you up. We just want to make sure that you know that we know.
We're catching you up. A few thoughts. One of the people who was injured was a lobbyist, which is how I learned
foods.
That this congressional charity game is mostly just an opportunity for Republican. I mean, not Republicans.
I was
going to
say the Democrats are
Democrats.
There too. Democrats.
I was going to say representatives.
Democrats love a lobbyist just as much as the next guy does.
So true. Uh-huh. Representatives.
If Cory Booker was there.
Oh well, he'd be
really
all over that shit.
Would
have
been the MVP of this show.
So true. But this is a charity event where like lobbyists and representatives get together and hobnob.
Right.
And mostly.
Figure out
and,
what
like,
the
figure
next
out how to make secret deals,
gonna,
I guess.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But so and that lobbyist, Matt Mika, is also has now been upgraded as well and was actually discharged on Friday.
Right.
So he's okay as well. And then two Capitol Police officers were also injured. The gunman was a 66-year-old guy with a history of violence and craziness of sorts.
And Bernie Sanders support.
And Bernie
Sanders,
he immediately became
really
the boogeyman
yeah.
of the right,
right.
because he
as
had
Bernie
a Facebook
Sanders
page
was,
where he was posting shit about Bernie Sanders,
right.
as if Bernie Sanders is in favor of arming crazy people.
Right.
You know who is? The Republican Party, who
right.
continued to do nothing about gun control legislation that's been just sitting
exactly.
languishing in the wings.
They do want to make sure that they can all arm themselves, though.
I know.
Which
well,
is...
here's... The whole reason I brought this up is because I have a thought about that, as you might not be surprised to hear.
I don't. I'm not. I'm not surprised.
I
want to hear it.
Agree that the logical conclusion of them, of their stance on gun control, is that they should be able to arm themselves.
Of course.
I just believe that we should be able to arm ourselves to protect ourselves from them as well. So I am happy to allow them to arm themselves. Not happy, because again, me and Brent don't believe in guns.
No.
We believe in government goons coming and taking your guns
right,
away,
exactly.
literally.
We don't believe in guns like as a an object.
I am prepared to support whoever wants to sue for the right of the American people to carry guns into the congressional chambers themselves.
Oh, yeah. They don't want that. They want to be able to carry them themselves.
They don't want just regular randos carrying guns into their offices. No. And listen, I'm with them. I don't want that either.
Yeah.
I want to work in a place where I don't have to worry about getting shot by randos. But you don't get to carry them either. But I don't want to also work... Here's the thing. They work for us. So, in fact... Correct. In doing that, we are working in a place where we can go and be shot by a rando because the American people also work at the Capitol.
Correct. You know?
I mean, they are our employees.
Sure.
So there is no world in which you allow your employees to carry weapons to protect themselves from you, and you also don't carry a weapon.
Yeah.
In any case, a second point I want to point out...
You're playing right into their hands, Lila, just wanting to arm everyone.
Well, a second point I want to point out is that Steve Scalise, because he's the majority whip, has armed guards with him, and he did at this time have armed guards with him. They were some of the people that were injured.
Yes.
They somehow didn't stop him from getting shot because they were only able to react to the crazy person gunfire.
The good guys with the guns.
Didn't.
We've got a lot to say about good guys with guns this week because
that's true.
Going to get to another story about that later.
But yeah, the good guys with the guns weren't able to preemptively stop this shooting, nor did they make it less deadly because all they could do was kill the guy.
Exactly. Cause more gunfire.
There was just more gunfire because of them. I believe there were some, there were other Republicans present at this shooting incident that were that had to duck for cover. Like Rand Paul was there.
Yeah, sure.
And had to, I think he ducked, he like jumped over somebody. He did something that sounded vaguely heroic.
I could see that.
I could see him being kind of heroic in a shooting, in a live shooter situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got that crazy eyes situation and that wild hair, I feel like.
He's probably like one of these people who has like done some like late night internet studying on what to do
would
in
guess
one of these
he's
probably, right?
Some sort of disaster prep. Totally. Aficionado for sure.
Yeah.
Libertarians have to be because they don't believe in any services protecting them.
Right, exactly. So you have to
have to be prepared. But in any case, I've also been hearing people complain that representatives shouldn't be out in public in groups like this doing events. And I would like to say to that point, representatives should all have to live in the same world as us.
Yes.
And if their legislation is making it dangerous for regular people, it should be dangerous for them too.
Correct.
I don't think anyone deserves to get shot.
No.
But I certainly don't think that we deserve it more than Steve Scalise or any other person on the planet. And so I disagree. I think they should have to play baseball games every day for all I care.
Exactly.
I mean, they should have to be people who can comfortably arrive in public.
Right.
They live in the world with us. They work for us. So in any case, to that point, I just want to say no.
I'm with you.
In any case, those were the only two points that we didn't get a chance to make because we were too busy talking about healthcare last week.
Right.
But we're going to dive right back into healthcare this week.
Right, exactly. Because when we talked to you on Tuesday, we had vague inklings of what the Senate plan was.
Literally, and now, we just preemptively talked about something that hadn't happened yet for like an hour.
Well, and people were doing this because everybody was starting to do this because it was being done in secret. So they were like, we have to sort of like hold on to any kind of like drip, drip, drip that we can get. So now it's... not a drip, drip, drip. It's like a...
It's dropped.
It's dropped.
The waterfall.
It's a fucking flood.
It's a flood.
And it's not good.
It's not good.
No.
A lot of the things that we thought would be in the Senate bill were, including huge cuts to Medicaid and a number of other measures that would make insurance harder to get for people and would revert things back to states that would maybe make people in certain states very vulnerable to the whims of the insurance market.
Yes, sure.
The dissatisfaction with the bill, like in the House, is mounting from both sides.
Right.
So it's getting politically complicated in the way that the House bill was politically complicated. And as much as I believe they can pass a horrible bill, I mean, they're all horrible enough to do this.
Sure.
I think that their plan to do it before July 4th is a little ambitious.
Yes.
Because the idea is they want to vote on it before July 4th.
The first thing that you've ever agreed with Ron Johnson.
I know. It's so rare that we agree, but here we are, me and Ron.
Yes.
Finally pulling it together.
Doesn't think we should be voting before before July 4th.
They want to do this so that they don't hear from their constituents because it's a massively unpopular bill.
They're going to hear from them whether they pass it or don't pass it from their constituents, I would think.
I would think as well. I mean, like with the House bill, they tried to kind of sneak this through and it got too much press because the secrecy of it, I was going to say the sneakercy of it.
Ooh, I like that.
Right? The sneakercy.
That's good. Uh-huh.
They're being sneakritters.
Sneakritters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the secrecy surrounding it was its own news story, and then suddenly everyone found out about it.
Yeah.
So everyone was waiting for the moment the bill dropped so that we could all tell everyone how horrible it was. And Chris Murphy and Liz Warren and everyone made live videos of them going through the bill.
Totally.
You know, they were all over social media, so it it wasn't that hard.
No.
But both McConnell and also the majority whip, John Cornyn, said that they need to move quickly.
Yes.
Because once, you know, John Cornyn said, it's not going to get easier.
No, it's not.
It's not going to get easier because it's a bad bill, you guys.
Right, exactly. And it should get easier.
It should get...
If you had a bill that America was going to, over time, fall in love with, then, you know... There's no rush.
Like an Obamacare-style bill.
Sure, yeah.
That got easier over time because more people signed on to it.
Yes. It got easier, and then it got harder,
and then it got easier again.
I mean, it had some ebbs and flows.
It has ebbs and flows. Sure. I'm just saying, like, bills ultimately need to get easier in order to pass.
Well, yes.
And asking people to vote on a bill they haven't had time to really consider because they won't like it once they know what's in it is a sign that your bill is flawed. That's just some thoughts from me.
Right.
He said August 1st is a drop deadline, which is hilarious to me. That, like, if it's if you're not going to do it, if it doesn't happen by August 1st, because then people will actually know what's in the bill.
I know.
Then reconsider who is paying you to do your job.
Yeah, exactly.
And like what your life is.
Yeah,
in any way. So we had some interesting people come out against it immediately.
Yes.
Now, for one thing, it seems like the Koch brothers are against it.
It does.
They haven't, they've been critical of it. They haven't officially come out.
And I think like there's somebody who works for them or their spokesperson or something has said that like they're not, and they're against it for the evil reasons.
Yeah, no.
There's some different camps of people.
Yeah,
here.
We're about to name a few people who are against it for evil reasons.
Right.
One, Ted Cruz.
Right.
He's only doing things for, I mean, all of his thoughts are evil, so of course that would be it.
Yeah.
Mike Lee.
Yes.
Utah senator.
Right.
Who is, I met him the last time I was lobbying on the Hill, and I was like, you are a real creeper.
Oh, God.
Man.
I'm not surprised by
that. He was real creepy.
Like a Republican senator from Utah has to be a certain level of creepy to be able to
dying for, like, gory details from first responders about, like, pulling bodies out of rubble on 9/11 and shit. Ugh. Like, gross. It was gross. Ron Johnson, Wisconsin. He, of the crazies, has been, I think, the most reasonable about his craziness. I mean, I use that in context.
The
crazies.
Yeah.
Rand Paul is the final crazy.
He's
angry because
there's
still a few subsidies in the
bill.
Right,
exactly.
He's a purist, though.
Right.
He sort of doesn't play ball.
I was going to say, he is only going to vote for, like, a total repeal, like, to the point where you can go back to, like, the Sharon Angle style sort of, like, trading chickens for healthcare.
Yeah.
Like, that's what Rand Paul's looking for. Right, yeah.
Then there are people who think it's too terrible to vote for.
Right.
That would be Dean Heller, who is he's the Nevada senator who's going to face a really difficult reelection, and I think probably realized that he really can't risk voting for a bill that will make him that contentious a figure in Nevada, which
Nevada,
is a swing state.
Yeah.
John Kasich is also, he's someone who, he said he's against it. He and a lot of other governors are privately pushing them because the Medicaid cuts are enormous and it will have a huge impact on a lot of state level politics. Kasich said he thinks that they can reform the bill.
Mm.
He doesn't think they need to scrap the bill.
Mm. Sure.
Kasich is like always skirting the line of evil
totally
in a way that bothers me.
Well, and he's also all about reforms. He just wants to reform everything.
Yeah, exactly. It's like
his keywords, his buzzwords.
I mean, if we're going to reform it by making it a completely different policy, then
he's going to like ideate on some reforms.
Right.
Like that's
he's
what
like
John
a fucking,
Kasich is
he's
doing.
He's like a corporate goon.
Yeah.
Who's going to make up a bunch of dumb words about ideating and shit.
Yeah.
And then there's the undecided people. Ben Sasse from Nebraska told a bunch of donors that he wasn't done reading the legislation, but also wasn't prepared to say he would vote for it yet, which was interesting because he's also pretty awful. Susan Collins and Bill Cassidy are both undecided, but say they have very serious concerns.
Yes.
Susan Collins literally used the term very serious concerns. Bill Cassidy, who's the Louisiana senator, said, there are things in this bill that adversely affect my state that are peculiar to my state.
Oh.
So I don't know what he's talking about,
I
probably never will.
But there are five hard no's
right
now. That's too many.
That's too many no's.
Yeah, and they're from different camps of people.
So you're never...
The problem is the biggest camp is the ones
who
crazies. Think that it's not yet terrible
enough. But here's
enough.
What I think the issue is going to be is we still haven't heard from Collins or Murkowski.
Yep.
If we have Heller, Collins, and Murkowski, they don't have enough votes to pass this bill.
Right,
And I think that There is a chance, first of all, that they don't get their votes regardless, because Collins and Murkowski are both opposed to defunding Planned Parenthood. Big things that this bill does is defund Planned Parenthood. So there's that element of it. And then I think anything that they do to move this bill far enough to the right to appease the Cruz caucus is going to make it very hard for people who are running in places like Maine to look their constituents in the eyes. And I think that's where suddenly you're going to see a second bubbling of dissatisfaction. Now, are all these people capable of voting for a thoroughly evil bill?
Right. This is what we've said this a million times. Like, you know, if you
don't trust them as far as you can throw them.
I was going to say, if ever you're thinking to yourself, God, I'm really just waiting for Lisa Murkowski to come in
and do the right
thing, swoop in and save the day and give America back their health care.
Right.
Like, if that's what we're all waiting for, then
too bad.
God help us all. Because, like, I mean, I realize that, yes, she is usually on the right side of at least the Planned Parenthood issue.
Evil.
And so she, you know, should be commended for that. But I mean, like, she will give in to the pressures of her party as well, if need be, if she's the last holdout on this.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, there's not... I think, though, that there are going to be too many people who, between the holdouts and the people who are vulnerable for re-election, I think there's got to be at least three people that are either going to be vulnerable or are currently vulnerable. Right.
Well, and they're going to be taking amendments for like the next for this week, basically. So what they're probably going to do is they're going to like put in some ridiculously low amount of money that won't cover anything that is like designed to give states like however they want to choose
to use it to
start a women's health clinic that will give out free mammograms but doesn't give out abortions or something.
Right.
You know what I mean? But they'll do something.
Yeah, they'll do something
terrible
like that
will like appease them even though it's garbage.
Yeah.
And then they'll vote for it.
Yeah.
That's what's, yeah. So, like, we
unless they hear from their constituents.
Right.
Call them,
call them, guys.
Call them.
Yes. Uh-huh.
This can't happen under the cover of darkness if it's not under the cover of darkness.
Right, exactly.
You know? And also, we haven't heard the CBO score yet.
That's going to come out.
The CBO report is coming out early next week. I would be surprised if they get anyone to vote on this before that. And that has been the death knell for the House bill more than once.
Right.
So.
Even though they...
went ahead and voted for it anyway.
Right.
But the first time that came out, that was pretty destructive. And I think that if similar numbers come out on the Senate side, it's going to be hard because the Senate is not as willing to go full crazy usually. Now, tactically, they're willing to go full crazy, but just politically, they haven't been as willing to go full crazy. So Tom Price tried to get out in front of the CBO report on Fox News Sunday today and say that the agency's been woefully inadequate in predicting the impact of health measures, but I'm curious how he would know.
But here's the thing, like, while I get that CBO score for the House bill was shocking and it gave, like, a lot of people pause and some of the moderates were like, whoa, I can't vote for this and, like, you know, great.
Right.
But, like, on some level, these are people who have been saying that they wanted to repeal Obamacare, which is the program that gave all of these people insurance.
I know.
So, like,
they've been saying this anyway.
So I don't know why the shock by the CBO. On some level, I think that they care about the CBO score because it looks bad politically. But I think just like when they go back to their like dark room to write a bill, they don't give a fuck about the CBO score.
Not.
Because like the whole point of this bill is to kick everybody off of their health care.
Exactly. That's the whole intention of this policy.
So, like,
it's not some high-minded thing.
Right.
I mean,
No, it's not. So stay on your guard. All I'm saying is, like, tomorrow if the CBO score comes out and it says 700 billion people are going to lose their health insurance, including people who don't even live in America.
Right.
Like, don't be heartened by that. Because, like, don't not call your senators because the CBO score was garbage or whatever. Like, you need – it's – they want to do this and they want to do it bad enough that they sort of don't really give a fuck about the CBO
score. Well, I mean,
score.
That's part of – like, they're trying to do this before the July 4th recess so that they don't have to face their own constituents about it.
Right.
That's truly what this rush is about.
Yeah.
And that's not – how it's supposed to work. I mean, think about how insane that is.
Yeah.
That your representatives want to vote for a bill that people in their district are not for.
Right.
In order to do God knows what before they actually have to face you so that it's done when they get to you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I can't believe that they are openly operating this way. It's boggling my brain cells.
Yeah.
And yet, here we are. Another person who may or may not be against this bill is Donald Trump.
The president. He's just wacky enough to veto this.
He's also just
wacky enough to
call it mean and vote for it too.
Well, I know
because
exactly.
I think he might be in favor of being mean.
Yeah, because you remember after the House
he's a bully.
Passed their bill that he had a frigging ceremony for in the Rose Garden. He called it mean.
Yeah, yeah. That and he said that the Senate version should be more generous. So today he was on Fox and Friends and he was asked about because Obama called it mean.
Yes,
he said that the legislation had fundamental meanness.
Yes,
and Trump oddly said that Obama had appropriated his term for the.
He
bill.
Stole my word.
He stole mean his is... word. He literally said he used my term. Mean. That was my term. Because I want to see, and I speak from the heart, this is what I want to see. I want to see a bill with heart.
Huh?
What?
Huh?
The hell is he talking about?
What is he talking about?
What?
What? He really doesn't know, guys.
Then he, well, I mean, who knew healthcare could be so complicated?
Well, exactly.
But he literally then said, it would be so great if the Democrats and Republicans could get together, wrap their arms around it,
yes.
and come up with something that everybody's happy with. It's so easy.
Oh, it's, God, it's
but
easy,
But we won't
guys.
Get one Democrat vote. No. Not one. And if it were the greatest bill ever proposed in mankind, we wouldn't get a vote. And that's a terrible thing.
That's not true.
I can't even with that statement. Like,
right. There is the greatest bill ever proposed in mankind floating around out there.
That's right. It's a single-payer bill, and it would solve all our problems.
Yeah.
That's
literally his problems.
His problems too.
Republicans' problems.
Yeah.
Americans' problems.
It could be everyone's problem solver, and
really
yet
could be.
It's not the Democrats that aren't willing to vote for that. It's some of them.
Well, it
and
is
some of them aren't
it's
great.
Too many of
it's
them.
Too many of them.
Yeah, and you know what? Oh, I actually got to thinking about this the other day, and this is a sort of related point. Anyway,
perfect.
We've talked about it before, but I saw some poll the other day about like how like, you know the. Overall support for a single-payer plan is, like, going up. And, like, you know, something like 17% of Republicans want it now or something, which seemed high to me,
yeah.
even though it's low, obviously. And it was, like, and 56% of Democrats want it or something like that. And, like, my first thought was, that is too low for Democrats.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what my second thought was? Fucking Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
That was my second thought.
Yeah.
She
railed against it.
She ruined single-payer for all of us.
Yeah.
I hate that it was a Democrat that got herself up to that.
She equated it with destroying Obamacare. She used it as a platform to blast Bernie Sanders from. This is an issue that,
so now
all
of her...
She is well aware that the entire rest of the civilized world and some of the uncivilized world has
sure.
this program. I
yeah.
mean, she is well aware of that. And she has said in the past that it would be ideal, but we just can't do it.
Yeah.
But she has been responsible... fundamentally for a shift in how Democrats themselves, and not
yes.
her, but the Clinton sort of ethos in general,
yeah.
has been responsible for a shift in how Democrats even conceive of policy. And to not have any party that is advocating for this policy is nuts.
It's upsetting. Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
And equating single payer with destroying Obamacare is like the cruelest thing that she could have possibly done.
Yeah.
That's cruel.
Ugh. Guys.
It's a Heritage Foundation plan again. If I have to
say
that one more time,
but
I'll,
Democrats,
well, no one's holding a gun to my head. I'll say it one more time.
more than half of us need to be on board with this.
Yeah,
like immediately yesterday.
Yeah. Well, there's been other polls that have shown that a vast majority of Democrats are at least open to this
right.
idea. That's a lower number than you were seeing before the Sanders phenomenon. So,
true. Yeah.
I think that there, and I also think that a lot of people who would maybe right now consider themselves Republicans are. Because a lot of people in the Trump camp are actually on board with single-payer health care.
Yeah.
A lot of people in the sort of like
yeah.
vague blue-collar, Rust Belty camp
yeah.
are in favor of single-payer.
Yeah.
We heard that again and again throughout the campaign.
Yeah.
It's not even that there's not a coalition. The coalition just doesn't exist in a party.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And half of the coalition is voting for a bunch of losers that want to take away everyone's health care.
Right, I know.
And, like, by the way, this is a losery move.
Yeah.
Their loseriness. I mean, like, I get that Democrats are currently the ultimate losers. Like, we're
yeah.
losing up a storm to a
yeah.
degree that's embarrassing.
We've got a story about more Democratic losing.
Oh, my God.
Coming
but
right up.
It's a losery move to have to sneak a bill past your own constituents.
Right.
That's
yeah.
also losery. In any
yeah.
case, you guys, bad news. There hasn't been enough of it. The California single-payer bill is dead.
Dead.
And why is it dead, Brent?
Because the Democrats couldn't get their shit together.
Come
That's why.
On.
Yeah. The assembly leader. Or
we know it
whatever,
passed the state Senate here.
Right, it already passed.
It passed 23-14 last month.
Sailed through.
It is a bill that many people have pointed out was kind of an incomplete bill. It didn't have a lot of the sort of larger, you know, it didn't have a pay for it. It didn't have a lot of, you know, there were specific measures that needed to be considered in terms of
how,
like care delivery and stuff.
This is how a lot of bills start.
This is how a lot of bills start.
Yes. You start with an idea. You sort of like get some sort of like, you know, general
consensus around the idea.
Right.
And then
and some
everyone
structure to it. And then you decide that you're going to collectively, you know,
hammer out the details.
Hammer out the details. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
But instead, we've decided not to do anything.
We're not going
to
hammer out those details.
Anthony Rendon, who is our the Speaker of the California Legislature, killed the bill this week. He announced it was on hold. So it's at least for the rest of 2017 killed.
Yeah, they're not going to vote on it this year.
It's not dead in the sense that they could vote on it next year, I guess. But it's going to remain in the Rules Committee until further notice.
Yeah.
He called the bill woefully incomplete. And most people have acknowledged that it was woefully incomplete.
Yeah.
But they many people in the Senate said they had voted for it because they wanted to keep working on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the bill was never...
It was going to just totally going away if they... Or totally going to go away if they didn't vote on it.
Right.
I mean, it was just sort of like going to die with all of the rest of the bills that don't get voted on. So, like, that's why it was voted on, even though it was sort of like not done.
Right. No, exactly. And so the announcement, here's what happened. The announcement was timed specifically to shield a bunch of assembly members from having to vote on this, knowing that the California Nurses Association was planning to primary people who voted against it, and knowing that the bill, because it was woefully incomplete, was going to have things that Republicans could pick up on and blast people for.
Yeah.
So it was a largely political decision
that,
and he claims to be a personal supporter of single payer. But I am having a hard time figuring out who the boogeyman is here. I mean, we know that Jerry Brown's not in favor of single payer.
Right.
I
think he said last week that he would not sign that.
Yeah,
actually.
I believe
it. We had talked about whether he would or wouldn't if it ever got to him, but he's not going to have to worry about it.
I am worried about what happens when Obamacare goes away and we have a state legislature that's not willing to act quickly on healthcare legislation. We had a terrible system before Obamacare here. We think of this as this wonderful liberal state, but we did not have a good system here before Obamacare.
No.
I know because I was personally in the cracks of that system.
Sure.
You know, I was personally unable to buy insurance in California
through
that
system. So you were in the pool.
I was in the pool.
Right.
I could have paid $1,000 a month for health insurance at 22.
Yeah.
But not everyone can afford that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying this...
You'll be able to under the new Republican system. You'll be able to afford health insurance.
Yeah. I won't be able to use it.
Bingo.
But I certainly can spend the money on it.
Yeah.
It'll be great. After I meet the $12 million deductible.
Exactly.
And then maybe it won't even be great. I'm sure there's a cap at $12 million and $1.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
But there's a few things that have been interesting about this. One is that the LA Times has been so against this bill. Like, to a degree that makes me feel like I don't read the LA Times anymore. Because it was like such an overtly politicized kind of coverage that I was like, listen, if there are problems with a bill, of course report on the problems.
Well, right, exactly.
Duh.
Right.
Their headlines were incendiary, though.
Yeah.
Their coverage was incendiary. I think I'm over the LA Times. And I think the LA Times has a vested interest in not having single payer happen, and I don't understand why. But I feel like we should do some digging.
Nancy Drew pants
I mean, it's like crazy that a major newspaper like that would take that hardline a stance
on
something like this.
Yeah.
So in any case, big business is still winning, guys. Don't worry.
Yeah.
big insurance is still
pharma
kicking our ass.
Yep.
So that's what's going on in California, and we're pissed about it. Now, back to the national level, now that we're like the loseriest people on the planet, everyone's trying to figure out whose head should roll over this Ossoff fuck-up.
Right.
And
here's who. Only John Ossoff's.
John Ossoff's head should fucking...
And whoever thought it was a great idea to spend millions of dollars on it.
Well, I have some ideas about people whose heads can roll.
Sure.
I just don't think that only one head should roll, and that head should be the only woman in leadership.
It shouldn't be Nancy Pelosi.
I get... that Nancy Pelosi's leadership in terms of campaigning has been problematic. She is somehow too far to the left for the right and too far to the left. And
she's got San Francisco values.
She's got San Francisco values.
Who knows what that
but
is?
Even, but
Nobody
they
knows,
apparently but. Are rich people values because they're not my values necessarily.
No, they're not.
I get that Nancy Pelosi is part of this problem.
Right.
She is part of Democratic leadership. And Democratic leadership has been making a series of disgustingly terrible decisions.
Right.
I don't understand why the only conversation that I am seeing happening right now is a conversation about whether they should replace Nancy Pelosi
right.
in leadership. Where is Tom Perez? Where is Chuck Schumer? Where are all these other people
yep.
who are also just the same old hacks as every, you know,
yeah.
they're old hacks at every level of the party. We
right.
specifically elected a representative of the old hacks
yeah.
to be the head of the party.
It's not
Tom
Nancy...
Perez has now right. fucked up four elections in a row. Where's
right.
his head?
Right. It's not Nancy Pelosi's fault that A, she represents parts of San Francisco, and B, that the Republicans spent a bunch of money trying to tie, and apparently successfully tying
right.
John Ossoff to her. You know, they used her sort of like as the boogeyman here, but like she didn't do anything wrong, and her job as leader in the House, you know, it's a different job.
And she's good at that job.
I was going to say, we've talked many times about like how we don't necessarily always agree with her, but if you need a block of votes, then I don't...
Nancy Pelosi can fucking make those votes happen.
I don't know what she's her job got on everybody, but, like, I mean, she can...
Her job in the House is to do that.
Yes,
it's to deliver a block of votes.
Correct.
She's good at that.
Yeah,
she's
I know.
A good House leader in
she's
that
She's a good
regard.
House leader. I mean, many people are now sort of, like, starting to look back at, like, the years when she was actually Speaker and Obama was the president. It was really her that is, like... I mean, yes, it was Obama's agenda, but I mean, like...
It was
she
her
got,
willpower that
she,
got this stuff
she
through.
She got that stuff done. I
yeah.
mean, like, she really, like, she delivered that stuff.
Yeah.
And that is what she is supposed to do. And she is good at it. And she's also raises a shit ton of money for everybody.
More than any other House Democrat.
Yeah.
By a lot.
Ever in history. Nobody's raised more money than she has in history.
Yeah. She's the biggest political fundraiser
so, like,
in U.S. history.
I don't always get that
she is a part of the problem.
Right.
I'm frustrated that of all of the people who are up there making terrible decisions
right.
in party leadership right now,
right.
that I've only heard conversations
right.
about her head role.
Right. Like, what did she have to do with anything?
Nothing. And listen, if she needs to be pulled out further out of the loop of which candidates are selected
sure.
for House races and shit,
sure.
pull her out. I don't give a shit right. if she's involved in the campaigns at all.
No,
I would rather she not be.
Yeah.
I would rather she be focused on her work in the House. I just, like, I don't see how replacing her with some, like, random white man is a solution to the problem of the rest of party leadership, including Tom Perez.
Totally.
Electing to support the wrong candidates in the wrong moments in every single situation.
Yeah.
Like, I think that we should be in a situation where we're willing to go through a few party leaders in order to find the right one.
Sure.
Tom Perez has fucked up four elections in a row at this point. I think his head, if not rolling, should be
yeah.
partially decapitated.
Do you know the DNC's fundraising is like in the crapper right now?
Of course
now
it is.
Too?
Everyone hates everyone in the DNC.
I know.
But it's because they're a bunch of fucking losers.
Well, I was going to say, they've gone through months of losers.
I wouldn't give them money. They spent $50 million on this asshole in... You know, who was described as radically boring,
right.
who wants to reach across the right. aisle.
Who didn't live in the district.
Who didn't live in the fucking district.
Yeah.
I mean, and also not live in the district like Zephyr Teachout didn't live in the district. And by the way, she lost in part because she was a carpetbagger. I recognize that.
Sure.
But she was also someone with national stature.
Yeah.
Who had already run for statewide
office
right,
exactly.
in New York State.
This guy was a nobody
chump. He was just a nobody, 30-year-old nobody.
Yeah.
Two nobodies who was boring on top of it.
Yeah.
It's infuriating. In any case, as much as I want to see some change in party leadership,
right.
I don't want that change to just be Nancy Pelosi.
Right.
That's not going to solve the problem.
Yeah, no, it's not.
And we are approaching being Nancy Pelosi apologists
right.
on this podcast, and we're not sorry about it.
No,
we think she's effective.
But exactly. And of all the people who were involved in his loss, I just find her to be sort of like, besides the fact that she sort of like, through no fault of her own, was tied to him, is like, you know,
she's
the
being a weird scapegoat.
She's the most innocent in the whole thing.
Yeah.
To me. So it's unfair.
Also, the only female voice in leadership there.
Yeah.
This is what happens
yeah.
in politics, and it happens in corporations, and it happens
all the time.
Everywhere. You know, it's you either hire or fire a woman when everything's about to go.
Right.
Up in flames.
Yeah.
And all the white men keep their jobs.
Yeah.
Yep. But I feel like there's other people whose heads could roll over this.
Agreed.
First.
Yes.
If everyone's heads want to roll, that's fine.
Yeah, sure.
If they want to fire her and everyone, then
yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah.
You know?
They don't.
But they don't. They want to fire her, be like, see, we did it, and then make the same mistakes for the next 1,000 years.
Correct. And they can't fire her. Somebody has to win an election against her.
Well, but so, they can lose the House leadership.
Of course, yes.
And that, I think, I feel like maybe...
No, but somebody has to run against her
for House leader, of course. I feel like, and someone did last time. Yeah, somebody did. And I feel like, I'm sure there's someone who would.
Yeah.
And
he ran against her, I think, for good reasons.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And I think someone should be challenged in every kind of primary out there. I mean, it's not that I don't think people should
run
against her.
She's getting primaried. P.S., yeah, well, guys.
She should be. Everyone should be getting primaried.
Yeah.
But my point is that this is not her fault.
No.
Or something the House should be deciding she can't have a leadership role over.
No, agreed.
If she wasn't delivering votes, then that might be a time to.
Yeah, exactly.
In any case. Okay, we're moving on.
Moving on.
To a story that became a non-story today once we decided it was a story.
Yeah.
Which was there were rumors circulating that Justice Kennedy was retiring, which was like, oh my God, we're all going to die.
Yeah.
He is 80 and he was having a reunion of old clerks.
Right, and it got moved up.
And it got moved up a year.
A year.
So everyone was like, oh my God, he's retiring. But then at the thing, he didn't announce he was retiring, so now it's back to being a non-story.
I love that was, like, the type of thing that was, like, on the books, like,
for enough time that they can move it a year. They were like, in 2029, we're going to have a reunion of all the clerks.
Uh-huh.
I'll be 80.
Right.
And we'll just, you know.
Yeah.
So either something concerning is going to happen or it won't.
But anyway, Politico reported that was nothing.
Yeah.
So there's no announcements that are going to be happening or anything like that. So keep... Pray for Justice Kennedy.
You guys, now we're going to have to worry every year about this.
Oh my God, so
infuriating.
Seriously.
I don't want this at all. I don't want the stress of this.
No.
Another thing that we're not going to have to worry about is the Comey tapes, because they don't exist.
Oh.
Trump finally admitted that they didn't exist. He admitted it in all places, of all places, on Twitter.
Twitter, of course.
On Thursday, he tweeted... With all of the recently reported electronic surveillance intercepts, unmasking, and illegal leaking of information, I have no idea whether there are tapes or recordings of my conversations with James Comey, but I did not make and do not have any such recordings. Mm-hmm. By the way, his legal team drafted that. If you were thinking that sounded a little bit too
logical
for him. It came a day before the deadline for him to hand over these tapes to the House Intelligence Committee.
Sure.
And Adam Schiff said that he was going to talk to Mike Conaway, who's his counterpart on the Intelligence Committee.
Yeah, they might still subpoena them anyway.
To see if, they might. Because he was like, I mean, you can say that you don't have them, but you don't have to tell the truth on Twitter.
You sure don't.
You know?
No.
And also, his tweets purposely left open the idea that someone could have the tapes, just not him.
Yeah.
He didn't record them, but anyway, that was meant to be a fuck you to everyone.
Yeah, that was meant to be a fuck you. And it was also just supposed to be hearkening back to that whole sort of like Obama was bugging me thing, too. Which was, I mean, ridiculous. But the thing that is like hilarious about this is that a lot of people now I have been reading have been speculating like if he was doing this like in like if his reason to do this was to like pressure Comey into like either saying something or not saying something or like... Is that sort of like its own, like, is that obstruction of justice?
People have been asking that like, because that seems to me like something that at least should be illegal for presidents to do.
Right? You can't just
threaten someone who's being under, who's testifying on about an investigation into something that your camp has done.
Yeah.
And then trying to threaten them. By claiming that you have recordings of them. And by the way, Comey was like, good.
I know.
I hope he does.
Lordy, I hope there are
Lordy,
tapes.
Lordy, I hope there are
said,
tapes.
Right?
The he used the word Lordy. He was so excited by the possibility. So it wasn't that Comey was nervous about this information coming out. But Politico ended their article about it by saying, White House officials have said for weeks they wanted to rip the proverbial Band-Aid off the tapes tweet, but Trump wasn't interested. The president, one advisor said, was never going to say there are no tapes. He has to hedge it still so there could be tapes, the person said. He didn't want to just give in. He never does.
Mm.
Oh, my God. Guys, it's like elementary school bullying tactics.
Totally.
But, like, also a spokesperson is involved.
Right.
It's like if your elementary school bully had a spokesperson.
I know.
Who was like trying to make sense of what is a nonsensical situation.
God. Yeah.
It was madness.
Yeah.
The White House is also pretty angry with the Obamas because why didn't they stop them from colluding with Russia?
Hello?
I mean, they were breaking the law. Why didn't the Obamas do anything about it?
Yeah.
It wasn't their fault they were breaking the law.
If Obama knew in September that Trump was up to shenanigans with the Russians,
why didn't he stop him?
Do something about it? Right. Now, Obama didn't know that Trump was necessarily up to anything with the Russians, but Obama did know that shit was going down with the Russians.
Yeah.
Like, big time. There was, like, a new Washington Post story that came out, I think, like, last week that sort of, like, detailed all of the things that the administration knew and sort of, like, also talked to administration officials who said that they, like, they choked.
Yeah, like, they basically feel like they bungled it. And part of it was they didn't want to look like they were favoring Clinton. Part of it was that they had no idea what to do, it seems like. But, yeah, Trump said he was on Fox and Friends today, or on Friday, and said the CIA gave him information on Russia a long time before they even before the election. And I hardly see it. It's an amazing thing. To me, in other words, the question is, if he had the information, why didn't he do something about it? He should have done something about it. But you don't read that. It's quite sad.
It's sad. Sad. Hashtag sad.
Sad that he didn't stop my staff from colluding with Russia.
I know.
It's so disappointing when people don't stop you from doing something that you're not supposed to be doing. Yeah,
but I do understand sort of how that was a bit of a, you know, they were in a pickle. I mean, like, what they could. Can you imagine? Think to yourself a scenario in which President Obama comes out like full-throatedly, like
the denouncing. Russians
are trying to hack the election. They're trying to hack you. They have bots out there. They are trying to, like, give you misinformation. They're trying to get into our voting systems.
This sounds like propaganda.
And they're trying to do it because they want Donald Trump to win. Like, think had that been said, like, 2 weeks prior to the election.
We would have been like, now everyone's lost their minds.
Yeah.
Because, like, that sounds like Russian-style propaganda.
It would have been so crazy. I can't even think what the GOP would have done with themselves had he done such a thing. And he knew it, so he didn't.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe he should have. I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, I think it's tough because the result was somebody was going to be meddling in the election.
Right.
It was either going to have to be Obama or the Russians, I guess. Right, exactly. Because once the Russians were meddling, his announcing they were meddling was going to be its own kind of meddling.
Right.
I don't necessarily think that a foreign power should have been the one.
Right, exactly. This Post report also sort of reports all the different ways, like, in that Putin was directly involved in the cyber campaign, too. So that was sort of like a new
article. But, and now I can't look at it again because the Washington Post won't let me. I've run out of free articles on the Washington Post.
You can look at it in July.
Yeah, I'll look at it.
We're coming up on it.
Yeah, exactly.
you can take a trip down memory lane.
Just take a trip down memory lane in July.
Yeah.
But so this is, I think, I don't know, these bombshells keep coming. This is, I feel like, a sign at least that these Russia stories are, because it's obviously patently absurd for the Trump administration to be like, why didn't they stop us from colluding with Russia?
Right.
But it means that the story is going to keep evolving, and it's getting more disturbing the more we learn.
Yes.
It's a slow burn,
but
I feel like them coming up with these fantastical ways to describe it away, like, well, they didn't do anything about it, is only a sign that they are ultimately kind of vulnerable in the long run.
I agree, yeah.
I mean, I guess. I hope so.
Who knows? Nobody
knows.
I mean, I think the fact that he's mentioned this week that he might fire Robert Mueller is another thing that...
Well, that...
We don't have a story about that, but I mean, like...
That would be the most Nixonian thing that could possibly happen in this moment.
Obviously, they're vulnerable.
Yeah. They're very... But they're, like, vulnerable in a way where they're just, like, lashing out now.
I know.
They're, like, losing... Well,
that's his
MO.
Go-to. Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting to watch, because even the threats of him firing Mueller are, I feel like, its own kind of performance art. Like,
I know.
This is only making it worse.
I know.
For, like, pretend you've never heard of him.
I know, exactly.
Never mention his name.
And that's what a lot of members of his own party are sort of, like, starting to say,
like,
to him and say in public. Like, just
if you committed
quit.
The crime, it will come out.
Right.
But keep quiet until it does.
Right.
Ram through as much of your horrible agenda as you can before it comes out. And then once it has come out, you've given yourself tax cuts at least.
Right. Exactly.
You know?
Yes. Like, and it's going to take a while.
You've got a little time.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, crazy to be reacting in a way that just draws attention to all of the... Because if he fires Mueller, then he's done... Then we know there's a crime.
Right, exactly.
You know, like, there couldn't be any clearer indication that there was a crime that he is aware was committed.
Right.
Than him trying to quell an investigation into that crime.
Yeah.
So, I mean, go for it if you want,
I guess. Sure.
But it's a concerning scenario.
Yeah, it is.
In any case... In other disturbing news, The Philando Castile videos were released this week.
Yeah, after
the guy was acquitted.
Was acquitted, right.
And it's a clear story of somebody shooting somebody for no reason on videotape.
Yeah.
Who is doing everything right.
Yeah, it's the most upsetting, I think, of any of these.
Yeah.
All these videos are upsetting. And, like, I don't want to sort of, like, belittle anyone being shot. And I also don't want to, like, make it seem as if anybody else deserved to be shot. Because
I don't.
And as we have said many times on this podcast, like, you know, we just don't.
Right.
But, you know, it's hard to watch someone doing all of the things that, like, you know, you see all these videos posted on Facebook of, like, parents talking to their kids about, like, what they're supposed, you know,
yes,
black families
totally.
Talking to their kids about what they're supposed to do if they, like, you know,
run,
if they get pulled over or if they're, like,
run into the police officer
or whatever. And it's like, and that is what he was
doing. He literally does everything like, he's supposed to do.
Yeah.
He's polite. He's calm.
Right.
He warns them that
he
has a gun because
he
knows that that could be a problem.
Right.
It's,
exactly.
And you can see that Officer Yanez sees that he's done something wrong as soon as
immediately
he does
after
it.
He's done it.
So you know that
right.
he reacted in a way, like you can see that he's reacting in a way that he shouldn't have.
Yeah. It's sort of like, I think the purest sort of proof out there, and there's a lot of proof out there, guys.
Too much.
That,
way too much.
That there will never be any justice in situations like this. And I almost said that's sad. It's sad.
Well,
but
it's worse than that. More sad than sad.
It's hard to find words for.
Yeah.
To look at something.
No,
like this
is a tough video because it doesn't even have anything that crazy people on the right can point to.
Right. I was gonna say,
and
in every single video, there's a convenience store. Right.
He was running away.
Like, all of those reasons we would say
are bullshit
reasons to shoot somebody because, like, you just don't, like, that's, you don't kill somebody for those reasons.
No.
Like, you know, you just don't. But, like, it seems like in every other one of those videos, there was something like that. There was like, oh, well, like that's why. It was that, you know, it was because he did that.
You cannot even find something like that
in
this
video. And this
doesn't
have, it's not there. This doesn't have that.
And there's the part with the kid comforting her mother. And it's like, it's too awful. It's like a,
yeah.
It just like plays out like a tragedy.
Yeah.
And everyone's a tragic character. Because even the officer is a tragic character.
At the end of it, he stands there with his gun still pointed in the car just like screaming cuss words. Because like,
yeah.
He knows.
I mean, it's like.
You can see his realization.
It's a dramatic scene.
Yeah.
But it's fucking awful.
Yeah.
In any case.
This is our second good guy with a gun story.
Yes.
By the way.
Oh, yeah. Here it is.
Because that is one thing that I have been like, where is the NRA on this?
Yeah.
By the way.
Did he not have the right to bear arms?
He did, actually. And he did the thing that you were supposed to do when you were pulled over by police and you have said firearm with you.
Yeah.
You're supposed
you
to
announce
inform
it.
Them that you have it.
Right. So that they are not then forced to react in panicky, crazy ways when they see it.
Right. Now, the officer claims that he was reaching for the gun. The one thing that we can't see
what he was reaching for.
It's dash cam video, so we can't see hands in the tape. And that was sort of like became a big part of the defense. And they were able to sow enough doubt. And that's all you have to do is the defense. Of his girlfriend, who was in the car, claims that he was
reaching for his ID and registration, which is what he had been asked for.
And you can hear in the video him saying multiple times, I'm not reaching for my gun. I'm not reaching for my gun. Because at this point, the officer has pulled the gun on him. So he keeps saying, I'm not reaching for my gun.
The officer pulls the gun before anything happens, really.
Well, yes.
So, I mean, part of it is the gun is pulled before he could have even tried to do anything dangerous.
Yeah.
So, like, even that is, like, a crazy argument.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Apparently, you can only be a good guy with a gun if you're white.
If you're white.
Only white people are good people with guns, apparently.
Yep.
That's what it takes to be good. Is you just have to be. You can be stupid. You can be literally mentally ill.
You can be exactly.
Any of those things.
You cannot be black though.
No, can't be black.
No.
It's. I feel like this video has been the most disturbing. This account and the photographs that we saw had seen before this, like every media element of this story
this
in particular
didn't
has
she
been.
Facebook, wasn't there like a live cast?
Yeah,
of
she
the
live
aftermath
streamed
of this
it.
Too? Like this whole story has just been like
it's been playing out on social media this whole time, and it's been the most disturbing to watch because there were all of these elements that weren't present in the other ones because it was, it had happened live basically on the internet. There was a 4-year-old in the car with them. He was a beloved like lunch guy, you know, like,
right. Yeah. He was like a school lunch guy. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, there were just so many things that, in any case,
terrible.
That's terrible.
Yep.
Now we're moving on to politics again, we learn that Jared Kushner has destroyed peace in the Middle East.
Remember how this was going to be easy, guys. Middle East peace.
Yeah.
They were just going to get it.
What's been so hard about all this?
Also, Jared Kushner, I got my Jew son-in-law. Yeah. He's gonna get in there.
He knows about the Middle East.
He can do it.
Yeah,
that guy. Easy. He'll get over there.
Just a 35-year-old.
He understands what's going on over there.
Human being. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He doesn't.
Nope.
Turns out
it hasn't gone well. It's not working out.
He might have personally ruined it. As a matter of fact,
that's right. He had a meeting with Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian Authority president, and it. When a rift opened up so dramatically that it seems like we might have just like... It might have ended the discussions.
Apparently he showed up with demands from Benjamin Netanyahu.
Yeah, a real thinker over there.
And that was
enough.
His plan.
Yeah, his plan was to show up and make demands on Israel's behalf.
On Israel's behalf.
And then not want peace, I guess.
I don't know. It's unclear. But all of these newspapers over there, like... Arabic daily newspaper based in London was like, called it tense.
Yeah.
And they were the ones that reported on this. And like,
Haaretz reported that the Palestinian officials were greatly disappointed.
Yeah. So we are not off to a great start over there, guys.
Yeah. And so Trump is now getting to decide whether we continue talks.
Right.
This doesn't sound like it's been super helpful.
The Trump administration is claiming that like, we're not going to pull out of the talks. Like, that's crazy.
Right.
But also, like, you can't have your first meeting with the Palestinian president be demands from Israel.
No. There's a reason that this hasn't been so simple to solve. And if that's what you thought it was going to take to solve it, then I guess it explains why.
Yeah, was their plan literally to be like,
all right, maybe they just haven't heard our demands.
I was going to say, we'll just go see what Israel wants.
Yeah, and then...
And then we'll tell Palestine.
It's probably just that Palestine hasn't heard the demands of Israel.
Know.
They just don't know what they want.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's easy.
Hmm.
It's just easy if someone was communicating the demand.
Right, they just need a middle guy.
Yeah.
Middleman.
A middleman. That's Jared Kushner.
Yeah.
Middleman extraordinaire.
God.
It's nuts.
Oh, man, you guys.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. And in continuing his plans to just do confusing evil wherever he can, Trump is also canceling a lot of Obama's opening up of Cuba.
Yes.
Canceling some of the new travel, not regulations, lack of regulations,
right.
I guess.
Yeah.
Because he's going to expose the crimes of Castro.
Oh, boy.
The Castro regime.
Yet another president who's going
to... It turns out this was mostly just a ploy to do something for Marco Rubio.
Yeah.
Which is not surprising. And it also doesn't actually, like, change as much as he claimed it was going to.
Right,
because the embassies are going to stay open.
Right.
All it's going to mean is something that we've tried before. And I'm just going to go ahead and say that it didn't work. where they're just going to...
You would know.
I would know, exactly. Yeah, they're making a lot of human rights demands, but he doesn't even know what's going on.
I was going to say.
He couldn't possibly know what he's talking about here.
Right, in this speech that he gave, he all of a sudden became like super pro human rights, and it's like, okay,
buddy. Guy. But basically, everyone who goes there is now going to have to go through a Treasury Department audit, which you used to have to do. They stopped having trials for those audits because it was a huge administrative burden that was going to cost $1 zillion and nobody wanted to deal with it.
Yeah.
So even though you would get these bills that were like $50,000 fines or shit like that, no one would ever, you would just be like, well, I want a hearing, and no one would ever do one because it was, so basically his plan is to waste taxpayer dollars auditing people when they decide on their own free will to go spend money in a country that we technically have the right to travel to because we are constitutionally guaranteed the right to travel there. It is the right to spend money that they are regulating.
Right.
But I don't see why this affects anything.
I don't know.
I mean, I see how this affects travelers there who are going to be annoyed by new paperwork.
Right.
But I don't see how this makes us safer or better.
It doesn't.
It's just a waste of our money.
Bingo.
He's going to drain the swamp by diverting all of our tax dollars away from services and towards auditing people who've traveled to Cuba.
Yes.
Jeff Flake came out against it, though, of course.
Yeah.
Jeff Flake, the Republican Party's lead Open Up Cuba guy.
Yeah.
That's why I've spoken to him.
I know.
That's why me and Jeff Flake had
your
a
besties.
Phone call.
Yeah.
I know. And I appreciate this about him even as he continues to be a Republican.
I know. He's not the worst.
He's not the worst.
On some other things, he's actually not the worst.
No, he's not the best.
No,
he's not. But he's not the worst by any means.
We're not here to endorse Jeff Flake by any stretch of the imagination.
But am I willing to endorse his policy on Cuba? Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm for it. Uh-huh. And in final news.
Oh, my God. This is hilarious.
This is so funny.
It's CNN, man.
They are developing a sense of humor the longer that
I guess. They Trump claim that it wasn't because they were having a sense of humor. They claim that it was
That's a nice claim, but even if this was unintentional, it was the unintentionally funniest thing that happened this week.
Totally. They have been shutting down the video. They're not doing any video recording.
Or audio, or live audio recordings of the press briefings.
Of some of the press briefings, right.
They've decided they're only going to do a few video press briefings.
Mm, yes.
And everything else is going to have to be dictated.
Right. Going to be done in private, that's so we can't watch it.
Exactly.
Or hear it.
Exactly.
So, CNN sent a sketch artist.
Yeah, sent their Supreme Court sketch artist down to the briefing to draw it.
Oh my God, it's so good. They should take a sketch artist and like someone to like, you know, like a stone tablet person or something. Like
I was going to say they should take one of those carnival like cartoonists. Right.
Yeah.
Where everyone can get a thing. Spicer could get like a thing with his name on it.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Like glitter.
Spicy.
And then like a big nose.
He looked the best that he's ever looked.
And this is doing wonders for his image.
Right.
He looked professional.
He did.
He looked he had no skin blotchiness. Confusingly blotchy. Exactly. Yeah, less his tan wasn't
his
as
suit
weird.
Fit in this photograph.
Yeah,
it's probably hard to draw an ill-fitting suit. In
I think
a
probably.
Sketch, probably.
I would think so.
So yeah, I mean, he really looked like
he was a real star of the sketch.
He was. Yeah.
And then they're also they've also prohibited live audio broadcasts. So CNN aired the briefing in full, like immediately after it ended on Friday as well. But this is too ridiculous. Like, if they want to do press a la 1902, then fine. But it's just going to force newspapers to come up with leakier sources, I feel like, to talk to.
I know. Well, and also, I mean, these stories are... I almost am sort of, like, making Sean Spicer's point to him, because I think that he was interviewed and said something to the fact, like, that, you know, these briefings don't hinge on whether they're on television or not.
Right.
And on some level, he's right.
Yeah.
But to that point, like, why not just put them on television? Because these stories are all going to be reported. They're still having the briefing.
These briefings are so that the White House can communicate to the American people.
Right, exactly.
They're supposed to be
they should want
information
to have these briefings.
That is available to the public.
Right, sure. And sometimes they're not going to always be great. Like,
no. Well, in this administration,
they're
having
never
a lot of not great ones.
But in theory, you would want to go and you would want to have one of these when, like, say, you pass healthcare.
Exactly.
I mean, maybe not when you pass healthcare.
Well, not
but
when
I mean,
they
like,
pass healthcare.
You know what I mean? Like, yes, you're right. It's communicating to the American people.
So
and, like,
why does it have to happen behind closed doors?
And it's also how you create a
trust.
Trustworthiness with them,
exactly.
Which they don't have. So it's like you would want...
I think
I don't
sowing
know. I don't
doubt is their,
it's so
is their MO.
It's just so crazy.
So,
I can't even... think about it. But
I mean, if your whole plan is to make everyone doubt everything,
yeah.
then who cares if your
That's
press
true.
Briefings are on TV?
Totally.
You know, it's too final to watch Sean Spicer actually stammer over what are ridiculous things that he's having to say all the time.
But they should send more sketch artists. They should send all the ridiculous people that could like
if the
you
newspaper
know, mark
becomes
this as a historical
30%
event.
Sketch artists and stone tablets.
Send,
I'm in.
Send a comic.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who writes the comics.
I mean, why not?
Is that,
little.
Is that a job? A thing?
I don't know.
Somebody who writes the comics? I don't read the comics. The funnies?
The funnies.
Send the guy from the funnies down there.
Yeah, the cartoonist.
Yeah, there you go. That's the word. That's it.
Yeah.
Yikes. It's hot in here, guys.
It's hot. We need to turn the AC back on, which is good, because we're done.
I know, thank God.
We did it.
My brain stopped working pretty much the moment
that you realized.
Finished.
Yeah.
It might have stopped working a few minutes ago. It's hard to
fine.
Tell.
Yeah, whatever. We will be back next week with news of the patriotic holidays.
Yeah. On one of the days.
On one of the days.
We have off because I have 4 days off.
Just found out.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But stay tuned. And if anything exciting happens with healthcare reform, we'll be tweeting about it.
Call your senators.
And literally just call your senators.
Yeah.
Even if they're voting in the right way.
Yeah, and that's important, actually, I think.
Yeah,
because like,
they need to hear that everyone is really concerned.
And a volume of calls is important. Like, we know that, I mean, Kamala Harris just wrote, like, a scathing op-ed about this. We know that she's got her head on right when it comes to this Senate healthcare bill. But, like, if she gets 12 times more calls than she does about any other terrible bill about this, she can say,
I got 12 times more calls than I've ever gotten.
My people are fucking furious about
13%
this.
Of the state's of the country's economy is pretty fucking unhappy. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So, like, it's important, even if you think your senators are getting it right, to call
you
them.
Need to light a fire under them, even if they're getting it right.
Right.
And, and yeah, and if you live in California, good luck getting through to them because it's impossible to reach any of them ever.
Exactly.
They need more phone lines at Dianne Feinstein's office. She's going to constantly ask for phone calls about everything.
I know.
She needs more phone lines.
I know. I feel like she's not used to getting called until of late.
I know. Well, she asked for it.
She did.
She said she wanted calls. I call her about everything now.
Yeah.
I never get through, but I call her all the time.
No.
In any case, that's the news this week.
That's it.
We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.